Chapter 12. It felt like ages since Cianne had left the cottage, though in truth less than a week had passed. She stepped down into the sink and leapt onto the lavatory floor, then peered back into the mirror to adjust her blouse and hair. She'd tell Emery she'd come in through the front door after taking a buggy to the house. She still had the key. Cianne made her way down the hall, peeking briefly into her room. The bed had been remade, and she smiled. Emery's odd knack for tidiness had him folding and tucking blanket corners as though crafting a spell, and while he had demonstrated to Cianne how to properly make a bed, she'd never taken the time to mimic the art. She often kept the door to her room closed, just so Emery wouldn't be tempted to rearrange her things. But with her out of the house, there was nothing to stop him. He must be bored. She passed her room and stuck her head into the library, but the paper magician wasn't there. The table and telegraph had both been moved to the right of the window, however. Terribly bored, then. Across the hall, she knocked softly on Emery's bedroom door. When she didn't get a response, she pushed it open. The room, cluttered yet neat, lay empty before her. She stepped back into the hall and opened the door to the stairs that led to the third floor. "Emery?" she called. She listened for a response, but received none. Nor did she hear any shuffling or footsteps. Her heart beat a little quicker. "You're being paranoid," she murmured to herself. Cianne retreated down the hall and took the stairs to the first floor. He wasn't in the dining room or kitchen, and Cianne noticed the distinct lack of noise in the cottage, like the building itself had settled into a deep, snoreless slumber. Her fingers danced over her necklace as she moved to the front of the house, changing her material alliance from glass to fire. Pyre magic was by far the most aggressive of the material's magics. Being armed with it, and matches from the stove to provide her with a flame whenever she needed one, made Cianne feel a little more powerful, a little safer. She checked the office and the front room, the front yard and backyard, but Emery was in none of them. Even Jonto had been ceased. He'd left the house then. He hadn't mentioned any plan to go away. Uneasy, Cianne went back to the magician's room and checked his closet. His magician's uniform hung there, so he hadn't left on any formal business. Perhaps he'd gone to the market for groceries. But Emery hated that chore, and would hire a runner to do it for him if at all possible. Cianne scanned his dresser, his nightstand, his bookshelves. She saw no sign of her folded birds. She opened a few drawers and even glanced under the bed. Where did he keep them? Or had he thrown them away? But Emery wouldn't toss her notes to him. Would he? She frowned, but thoughts of Saraj pushed missish worries away. Could he have come for Emery? She searched the rooms again, one by one, until she made it back to the front door. No signs of blood or struggle, no signs of a break-in. Becoming a gaffer again, Cianne used a piece of glass from her purse to magnify the kitchen and dining room floor, searching for anything, a drop of missed blood, a piece of Saraj's hair, perhaps. Nothing. She even did a reflection spell on the lavatory mirror to see what had happened in that room over the past day. That is, until the mirror displayed Emery undressing. She broke the spell and left the lavatory with red cheeks. She leaned against the hallway wall by her bedroom door. "He must be safe, then," she said. Hearing the words out loud gave her some small comfort. Cianne waited several long minutes there, hoping she'd hear Emery unlock the front door. But the cottage remained silent. Peeling herself from the wall, Cianne went to the library and scrawled a note on a yellow square of paper there. "Patrice told me Saraj had been spotted near Berkshire. Please be careful. Love you." She folded the paper into a songbird and left it on Emery's bedroom windowsill, making it look like she'd sent the bird from the mansion. Then she slipped back through the lavatory glass and into her room at Magician Bailey's residence, where she finally managed to get a few hours of sleep. 3 days. 3 days of waiting for Saraj to make his move, of sending out birds to survey the area, of searching Magician Bailey's daily newspapers for articles about excisioners. 3 days since her run-in with Saraj and Redding, and she hadn't heard one peep. Not from him, and not from Emery. Cianni still sent her birds, or moths, or bats, to Emery every evening as soon as twilight promised to hide their departure, but she hadn't received a response. That made 4 days without any contact with him, and she knew he'd returned to the cottage. She'd checked cottage one through the glass in the lavatory and seen his wet towel hanging on the wall. So why had Emery stopped responding to her? She doodled water lilies in the margins of her ledger as this question plagued her. She sat at the table in the apprentice's study, across from Bennett, who labored over the links of an expansion chain. The command, enlarge, would make the wearer of the chain appear larger to passers-by. How large depended on the thickness of the paper. A rather complicated illusion spell, given the make of each link. It was one Cianni planned to use in her preparations for her magician's test. Number 37, something to defend against a tramp. But once again, Cianni found she had a hard time concentrating on her studies. Magician Bailey had certainly given her space, though he still asked her to sit in on Bennett's evening lessons. He'd stopped ragging on Emery, but Cianni's relationship with the belligerent folder had hardly become peaches and cream. In fact, Magician Bailey's demeanor toward Cianni had soured further, if such a thing were possible. For days, he'd looked at her with outright suspicion, treating her as the suspect to his detective. She could only guess that the man had noticed a scratch on his Mercedes and assumed Cianni to be the guilty party. And she was, more or less. Still, Cianni didn't care enough to ask Magician Bailey if his breeches had grown too tight. She had enough men to worry about. What if, she wondered, stilling her pen. What if Emery's grown tired of me? Preposterous, wasn't it? They got on splendidly, all the time. He loved her. They'd even discussed marriage. Cianni could laugh at the idea of him growing bored with her. And yet she didn't. She blinked rapidly to hide a tear, then glanced at Bennett to see if he'd noticed, but his chain spell demanded all his attention. Taking a deep breath, Cianni finished her doodle. What if he's using Magician Bailey as an excuse to distance us? She wondered. What if all of this is meant to be some sort of cushion so he can break our relationship cleanly? Magician Emery Thane had been married before, and it had ended very, very badly. Cianni had seen firsthand the damage that relationship had done to him, the jagged crack it had left in his heart. Surely that canyon had not yet been filled. And what if it never was? What if Emery couldn't handle the commitment once Cianni graduated from his tutelage and their romance became public? What if Cianni was only ever meant to be a secret? You'll kill yourself thinking like that, she chided herself, gripping her pen tighter. Be reasonable. There must be an explanation. She wondered where Emery had gone the day she'd transported to his cottage and left that warning, but he hadn't even replied to that. Do you remember Magician Whitmill? Cianni glanced up at Bennett's words. He held a completed chain link in his hands, and his brown eyes smiled at her. They made her think of a teddy bear. Cianni blinked to clear her mind, to pull her thoughts away from Emery for long enough to search her memory for the name. It rang a bell, and her mind zoomed back nearly 3 years to her first semester at Tagus Praff. She sat in the auditorium of the school, on the aisle, beside a classmate she didn't know, but whose face she recalled with perfect clarity, for all the good it would do her. In her mind's eye, she looked ahead at the stage, at the portly polymaker with gray-streaked hair and a gray-streaked mustache. She laughed. Bennett smiled. So you do. He was recruiting for his textile company in Virginia, Cianni stated. He brought in that huge pinboard full of product and knocked it over with his hip when he bent down to pick up his handkerchief. Bennett chuckled. I shouldn't have laughed, but I did. I don't think anyone took him seriously for the rest of the lecture. Letting her ledger close, Cianni asked, What brought that up? He shrugged. Just thinking, I guess. Folding makes for good thinking.
I wanted to be a Polymaker, you know.
I didn't.
I only decided the month before graduation,
Bennett admitted.
So much has yet to be discovered in polymaking, and it would be interesting to find new spells for a new magic. Before that, I had thought rubber would be an interesting trade. Or, rather, my father did. He works facilities at a siping factory.
Is he a magician?
No, just me. But I have a sister-in-law who's a smelter.
He paused, turning his link over in his hand. You can still be a polymaker, Cianni thought. She touched the collar of her blouse, feeling the charm necklace hidden beneath it.
You wanted to be a smelter, didn't you?
Bennett asked. She met his gaze.
I'm surprised you remember that.
When did I tell Bennett about smelting? Her memory spun back. Back at Tagus Prath, the Christmas dinner.
Are you...
He hesitated.
Are you disappointed about folding?
I was at first, she admitted, but not anymore. I'm glad things worked out the way they did.
Me too, I think,
Bennett replied.
I mean, I guess I can't really know without having a polymaking apprenticeship for a comparison, you know?
She nodded.
I'm worried about leaving,
he added, resting his chin in his palm. Cianni wove her fingers together over her ledger. You'll make a fine magician.
Not that, he said. I'm worried about leaving Magician Bailey. He doesn't have many friends.
Hard to believe, I know.
Cianni snorted.
I'm sure he'll get another apprentice quickly, but he takes a long time to acclimate, as you've witnessed. But deep down, he means well. He's misunderstood. I think he's had it hard, you know?
Cianni thought back to her journey through Emery's heart, where she'd first seen Magician Bailey, or Prit. She wondered how many people had bullied him, and for how long. Would she behave the same way if she'd suffered his fate?
I know a little, she said, but you can't let that hold you back.
I won't. It's just something I think about.
Cianni reopened her ledger. A paper slipped out from its back pages and onto her lap, a half sheet of paper, roughly torn along one of its long edges. The second half of the mimic spell she'd left with Magician Avioski. Its face remained blank. She wondered if Magician Avioski knew about the anonymous tip on Saraj and suspected her. That was, of course, assuming anyone had bothered to relay the information to the head of education. Emery obviously hadn't fact-checked with Magician Avioski, or they'd both be pounding down Magician Bailey's door. Bennett clasped his hands together.
Cianni, I...
Could you excuse me? She asked, standing from the table. I need some of that thinking time. She held up the ledger. I have a lot more work to get done. Bennett nodded.
Of course,
he said, but he looked disappointed. She offered the man a smile before exiting the study. It had not been her intent to cut him off. The words had already been in her throat. But she was grateful for it. Bennett was a wonderful friend and, admittedly, a wonderful specimen of a man, but she worried over his friendliness. At that moment, her name had sounded especially friendly on his lips.
I'm awful,
she mumbled to herself, letting her feet carry her a ways down the hall before slipping the mimic spell onto the cover of her ledger. Leaning it against her left palm, she wrote, Have you heard anything? To Magician Avioski. She didn't need to explain what she meant. She leaned back against the wall, holding the mimic spell in front of her, waiting for Magician Avioski's scrawl to appear below hers. Seconds passed. A minute. 2 minutes. But the half-page stubbornly remained blank. Of course, the mimic spell had no chimes or lights to alert its holder when writing appeared on it. Cianni would have to wait until Magician Avioski looked at her half of the spell. Her only hope for hearing word faster was to use a telegraph. She assumed Magician Bailey owned one, as he owned a ridiculous number of things.
but finding one and asking permission to use it didn't rank high on the list of things she was eager to accomplish. She let out a long, slow breath and slipped the mimic spell back into her ledger. Outside, a cloud shifted in the sky, letting a ray of sunlight pierce through the hallway window. Stepping from its sudden brilliance, she blinked spots from her eyes. Before they had cleared, she noticed something perched on the eaves of the house. It stood about a foot high and, though it had no feathers, pruned its right wing. A paper hawk. Sini gawked for a moment before stepping closer to the glass, making slow movements so as not to startle the lifelike spell. Dozens of papers comprised its body, each folded so crisply into the next that Sini could barely spy the seams. Brown paper, though a few off-white pieces formed the hawk's breast. The creature couldn't have been Bennett's handiwork, which meant it had to be Magician Bailey's creation. A cloud passed over the sun once more, allowing Sienny a better view of the bird. A fierce-looking spell, certainly, complete with tightly rolled paper talons and a sharp cardstock beak hinged to open and close. Sienny hadn't seen a single spell adorning Magician Bailey's estate, besides the ones she and Emery passed back and forth. Had she missed this one? Or was it new? And why a hawk, of all things? Surely Magician Bailey wasn't so sour as to want to scare away songbirds. The hawk's wings spread, and it took off from the roof, flying out over the yard a ways, before arching up and over the mansion, out of Sienny's line of sight. She hummed, pulling away from the window. Down the hall, she spied Magician Bailey speaking to one of the maids who came by thrice a week to clean the few lived-in portions of the house. Sienny hurried up to her bedroom before he had a chance to spot her. Sienny drew her thumb across the crease of a dog-ear fold, careful to ensure its edges lined up perfectly, before inserting the newly formed triangle into a notch on the skeletal arm she was constructing on the breakfast table. Another hour or two, and she'd have it finished and ready to test. If it didn't work, she'd have to go over each and every paper and fold to find the mistake. If she couldn't find it, she'd have to start over. Fortunately, she was confident that she'd seen Jonto's arms enough times to get this spell right. The challenge was to make the arm act as its own whole instead of a piece of a larger body. Number one, something to open a door. Once she made the wrist fully functional, this contraption would do just that, and she could cross the first requirement for her magician's test off the list. Fennel barked from his perch on the bed, his paper body barely heavy enough to dent in the mattress. He hovered over Sienny's ledger and growled, which sounded more like a piece of paper flapping in the wind, then bit down on the mimic spell protruding from the ledger's cover. Two jerks of his head pulled it free. Sienny bounced onto her feet and rushed over to the pup, tugging the spell from his mouth. As she watched, Magician Avioski's stiff penmanship scrawled across it in black ink, as though it were being written by a ghost.
"I don't want you involving yourself in this, Miss Twill."
Biting her lip, Sienny took the spell to the breakfast table and wrote back, in pencil,
"You promised you'd tell me. I need to know."
A dot of black ink appeared below Sienny's words, growing larger with each passing second. Magician Avioski had set her pen down, likely debating her response, and the ink saturated the paper on her end. Finally, she wrote,
"He was spotted in Reading not long ago. Yes, he's still in England. Magician Hughes believes he's trying to collect funds and false papers in order to escape through Europe unscathed."
Again, the pen soaked the paper. Magician Avioski's hesitant hand penned,
"Magician Juliet Cantrell has been murdered."
Blood withdrew from Sienny's face and hands. Magician Juliet Cantrell. Sienny knew her, though not personally. Criminal affairs. A smelter. She'd been involved in the hunt for Grath Cobalt. According to Emery, she was the one who had arrested Saraj in Saltdean. Her eyes focused on Magician Avioski's last word. Murdered. Images of Delilah's wide, panicked eyes filled her vision. the way she'd struggled against her restraints in that chair as Grath grabbed her neck. Cianni squeezed her eyes shut for several seconds, waiting out a chill that slid down her spine. Opening her eyes, she wrote,
"He killed her?"
"Ripped out her heart. Magician Hughes isn't sure if he's used it yet."
Cianni pressed her hand to her chest, feeling her own heartbeat speed. Stolen her heart. Just as Lyra had stolen Emery's. Just as he'd wanted to steal hers at the dock. Except Juliet didn't have anyone to steal it back for her. How much time had passed since Saraj? But would he have even left Magician Cantrell's body whole enough to be revived?
Cianni shuddered. Her stomach twisted and knotted around itself, sending bile climbing up her throat. She swallowed hard.
Saraj had said he still needed a heart in Reading. He'd gone for Magician Cantrell's. If Cianni had only stopped him then. She paused, and for a moment her whole self felt empty. Had Saraj stolen Magician Cantrell's heart because she had gotten too close to finding him? Or had he stolen it because Magician Cantrell had been one of two magicians responsible for his imprisonment?
Nausea replaced the emptiness.
Emery had been the other. Swallowing, she wrote,
"Where?"
"You are safe, Miss Twill," the gaffer replied. "Magician Hughes is on top of the case. I'll let you know."
Cianni wrote in the space ahead of Magician Avioski's sentence,
"Where?"
Several minutes passed before the spell read,
"Do not be brash. I will let you know when Saraj is found."
Cianni tried to goad Magician Avioski further, but the gaffer refused to respond after that. The mimic spell had nearly run out of space in any event. Crumpling into a chair, Cianni stared at the brief conversation in her hands. Saraj wouldn't have stayed in Reading, not after his run-in with Cianni, but criminal affairs would have started their search there after her anonymous tip. How far had Magician Cantrell tracked Saraj before? Cianni tapped her pencil against the tabletop, clenching her teeth to keep from sobbing. Deeper and deeper into England, still not arrested. Magician Cantrell was likely the reason Saraj hadn't tracked Cianni down yet. He hadn't had time, being on the run. Would he save the smelter's heart for the spell he'd used on Cianni? On Emery? Cianni knew one thing. There was no limit to the number of people Saraj would kill to get his freedom, and a little pocket change on the side. Was he headed toward London for her, in pursuit of Grath's secret, or had he given up that chase for the sake of escape? She slammed her pencil tip onto the table, breaking it off. She'd beaten Lyra. She'd beaten Grath. And yet, still, no one would confide in her. No one would let her help. She couldn't go to Reading to try and track Saraj down, could she? Her magician's test was approaching rapidly. Could she scour an entire city searching for one elusive man? Her clues at Gosport had been found by luck alone. She hadn't even been able to deduce where Emery had gone off to. But she had a better chance of beating him than anyone else. She could play both prey and predator. She could be Magician Cantrell and Magician Hughes and Magician Avioski and Emery all in one. She scanned the mimic spell, paused, touched her necklace. Whatever Magician Avioski knew, Magician Hughes told her, and Cianni had a hunch as to how he'd conveyed the information. She'd strike in the afternoon, when Magician Avioski would be away for her educational duties. By this time tomorrow, Cianni would know too.